Chapter 32. Dangerous Words. Lord Barthanas's manor crouched like a huge toad in the night, covering as much ground as a fortress with all its walls and outbuildings. It was no fortress, though, with tall windows everywhere, and lights, and the sound of music and laughter drifting out, yet Rand saw guards moving on the tower tops and along the roof walks, and none of the windows were close to the ground. He got down from Red's back and smoothed his coat, adjusted his sword belt. The others dismounted around him, at the foot of broad, white stone stairs leading up to the wide, heavily carved doors of the manor. 10 Shinarans under Uno made an escort. The one-eyed man exchanged small nods with Ingtar before taking his men to join the other escorts, where ale had been provided and a whole ox was roasting on a spit by a big fire. The other 10 Shinarans had been left behind, along with Perrin. Every one of them had to be there for a purpose, Varen had said, and Perrin had no purpose to serve this night. An escort was necessary for dignity in Kyrianan eyes, but more than 10 would seem suspicious. Rand was there because he had received the invitation. Ingtar had come to lend the prestige of his title, while Loyal was there because Ogier were sought after in the upper reaches of the Kyrianan nobility. Huron pretended to be Ingtar's body servant. His true purpose was to sniff out the Dark Friends and Trollocs if he could. The Horn of Valyr should not be far from them. Matt, still grumbling about it, was pretending to be Rand's servant, since he could feel the dagger when it was close. If Huron failed, perhaps he could find the Dark Friends. When Rand had asked Varen why she was there, she had only smiled and said, "To keep the rest of you out of trouble." As they mounted the stairs, Matt muttered, "I still don't see why I have to be a servant." He and Huron followed behind the others. "Burn me, if Rand can be a lord, I can put on a fancy coat, too." "A servant," Varen said without looking back at him, "can go many places another man cannot, and many nobles will not even see him. You and Huron have your tasks."
"Be quiet now, Matt," Ingtar put in, "unless you want to give us away."
They were approaching the doors, where half a dozen guards stood with the tree and crown of House Damodred on their chests, and an equal number of men in dark green livery with tree and crown on the sleeve. Taking a deep breath, Rand proffered the invitation. "I am Lord Rand of House Althor," he said, all in a rush, to get it over with. "And these are my guests, Varen Aes Sedai of the Brown Aja, Lord Ingtar of House Shinoa in Shinar, Loyal son of Arendt, son of Holland, from Steading Shangtai." Loyal had asked that his steading be left out of it, but Varen insisted they needed every bit of formality they could offer. The servant who had reached for the invitation with a perfunctory bow gave a little jerk at each additional name. His eyes popped at Varen's. In a strangled voice he said,
"Be welcome in House Damodred, my lords. Be welcome, Aes Sedai. Be welcome, friend Ogier."
He waved the other servants to open the doors wide and bowed Rand and the others inside, where he hurriedly passed the invitation to another liveried man and whispered in his ear. This man had the tree and crown large on the chest of his green coat.
"Aes Sedai," he said, using his long staff to make a bow, almost bending his head to his knees, to each of them in turn.
"My lords, friend Ogier, I am called Ashen. Please to follow me."
The outer hall held only servants, but Ashen led them to a great room filled with nobles, with a juggler performing at one end and tumblers at the other. Voices and music coming from elsewhere said these were not the only guests or the only entertainments. The nobles stood in twos and threes and fours, sometimes men and women together, sometimes only one or the other, always with careful space between, so no one could overhear what was said. The guests wore the dark Kyrianan colors, each with bright stripes at least halfway down his or her chest, and some had them all the way to their waists. The women had their hair piled high in elaborate towers of curls, every one different, and their dark skirts were so wide they would have had to turn sideways to pass through any doorway narrower than those of the manor. None of the men had the shaved heads of soldiers. They all wore dark velvet hats over long hair, some shaped like bells, others flat. And as with the women, lace ruffles like dark ivory almost hid their hands. Ashen wrapped his staff and announced them in a loud voice, Varen first. They drew every eye. Varen wore her brown-fringed shawl embroidered in grapevines. The announcement of an Aes Sedai sent a murmur through the lords and ladies,
and made the juggler drop one of his hoops, though no one was watching him any longer. Loyal received almost as many looks even before Ashen spoke his name. Despite the silver embroidery on collar and sleeves, the otherwise unrelieved black of Rand's coat made him seem almost stark beside the Kyrianin, and his and Ingtar's swords drew many glances. None of the lords appeared to be armed. Rand heard the words Heronmark blade more than once. Some of the glances he was receiving looked like frowns. He suspected they came from men he had insulted by burning their invitations. A slim, handsome man approached. He had long, graying hair, and multi-hued stripes crossed the front of his deep gray coat from his neck almost to the hem just above his knees. He was extremely tall for a Kyrianin, no more than half a head shorter than Rand, and he had a way of standing that made him seem even taller, with his chin up, so he seemed to be looking down at everyone else. His eyes were black pebbles. He looked warily at Varen, though.
"Grace honors me with your presence, Aes Sedai."
Barthanas Damodred's voice was deep and sure. His gaze swept across the others.
"I did not expect so distinguished a company. Lord Ingtar, friend Ogier."
His bow to each was little more than a nod of the head. Barthanas knew exactly how powerful he was.
"And you, my young Lord Rand, you excite much comment in the city and in the houses. Perhaps we'll have a chance to talk this night."
His tone said that he would not miss it if the chance never came, that he had not been excited to any comment, but his eyes slid a fraction before he caught them to Ingtar and Loyal, and to Varen.
"Be welcome."
He let himself be drawn away by a handsome woman who laid a beringed hand buried in lace on his arm, but his gaze drifted back to Rand as he walked away. The murmur of conversation picked up once more, and the juggler spun his hoops again in a narrow loop that almost reached the worked plaster ceiling, a good 4 spans up. The tumblers had never stopped. A woman leaped into the air from the cupped hands of one of her compatriots, her oiled skin shining in the light of 100 lamps as she spun and landed on her feet on the hands of a man who was already standing atop another's shoulders. He lifted her up on outstretched arms as the man below raised him in the same way, and she spread her arms as if for applause. None of the Kyrianin seemed to notice. Varen and Ingtar drifted into the crowd. The Shinaran received a few wary looks. Some looked at the Aes Sedai with wide eyes, others with the worried frowns of those finding a rabid wolf within arm's reach. The latter came from men more often than women, and some of the women spoke to her. Rand realized that Matt and Huron had already disappeared to the kitchens, where all the servants who had come with the guests would be gathering until sent for. He hoped they would not have trouble sneaking away. Loyal bent down to speak for his ear alone.
"Rand, there is a waygate nearby. I can feel it."
"You mean this was an Ogier grove?" Rand said softly, and Loyal nodded.
"Steading Tsofu had not been found again when it was planted, or the Ogier who helped build Al-Kair, Ra, Hienalan, would not have needed a grove to remind them of the steading. This was all forest when I came through Kyrian before, and belonged to the king."
"Barthanas probably took it away in some plot."
Rand looked around the room nervously. Everyone was still talking, but more than a few were watching the Ogier and him. He could not see Ingtar. Varen stood at the center of a knot of women.
"I wish we could stay together."
"Varen says not, Rand. She says it would make them all suspicious and angry, thinking we were holding ourselves aloof. We have to allay suspicion until Matt and Huron find whatever they find."
"I heard what she said as well as you, Loyal. But I still say, if Barthanas is a dark friend, then he must know why we're here. Going off by ourselves is just asking to be knocked on the head."
"Varen says he won't do anything until he finds out whether he can make use of us. Just do what she told us, Rand. Aes Sedai know what they are about."
Loyal walked into the crowd, gathering a circle of lords and ladies before he had gone 10 steps. Others started toward Rand, now that he was alone, but he turned in the other direction and hurried away.
"Aes Sedai may know what they're about, but I wish I did. I don't like this. Light, but I wish I knew if she was telling the truth. Aes Sedai never lie, but the truth you hear may not be the truth you think it is."
He kept moving to avoid talking with the nobles. There were many other rooms, all filled with lords and ladies, all with entertainers, 3 different gleemen in their cloaks, more jugglers and tumblers, and musicians playing flutes, bitterns, dulcimers, and lutes, plus 5 different sizes of fiddle, 6 kinds of horn, straight or curved or curled, and 10 sizes of drum from timbre to kettle. He gave some of the horn players a second look, those with curled horns, but the instruments were all plain brass.
They wouldn't have the Horn of Valir out here, fool, he thought. Not unless Barthanas means to have dead heroes come as part of the entertainment.
There was even a bard in silver-worked Tyran boots and a yellow coat, strolling through the rooms, plucking his harp and sometimes stopping to declaim in high chant. He glared contemptuously at the gleemen and did not linger in the rooms where they were, but Rand saw little difference between him and them except for their clothes. Suddenly Barthanas was walking by Rand's side. A liveried servant immediately offered his silver tray with a bow. Barthanas took a blown glass goblet of wine. Walking backwards ahead of them, still bowing, the servant held the tray toward Rand until Rand shook his head, then melted into the crowd.
You seem restless, Barthanas said, sipping.
I like to walk.
Rand wondered how to follow Varen's advice, and remembering what she had said about his visit to the Ammerlin, he settled into Cat Crosses the Courtyard. He knew no more arrogant way to walk than that. Barthanas's mouth tightened, and Rand thought perhaps the lord found it too arrogant. But Varen's advice was all he had to go by, so he did not stop. To take some of the edge off, he said pleasantly, "This is a fine party. You have many friends, and I've never seen so many entertainers."
"Many friends," Barthanas agreed. "You can tell Galdrian how many and who. Some of the names may surprise you."
"I have never met the king, Lord Barthanas, and I don't expect I ever will."
"Of course. You just happen to be in that flyspeck village. You are not checking on the progress of retrieving that statue. A great undertaking, that."
"Yes." He had begun thinking of Varen again, wishing she had given him some advice on how to talk with a man who assumed he was lying. He added without blinking, "It's dangerous to meddle with things from the Age of Legends if you don't know what you are doing."
Barthanas peered into his wine, musing as if Rand had just said something profound.
"Are you saying you do not support Galdrian in this?"
he asked finally.
"I told you, I've never met the king."
"Yes, of course. I did not know Anderman played at the great game so well. We do not see many here in Kyrian."
Rand took a deep breath to stop from telling the man angrily that he was not playing their game.
"There are many grain barges from Andor in the river."
"Merchants and traders. Who notices such as they? As well notice the beetles on the leaves."
Barthanas's voice carried equal contempt for both beetles and merchants. But once again he frowned as if Rand had hinted at something.
"Not many men travel in company with Aes Sedai. You seem too young to be a warder. I suppose Lord Ingtar is Varen Sedai's warder."
"We are who we said we are," Rand said, and grimaced. "Except me."
Barthanas was studying Rand's face almost openly.
"Young. Young to carry a Heronmark blade."
"I am less than a year old," Rand said automatically, and immediately wished he had it back.
It sounded foolish to his ear, but Varen had said act as he had with the Ammerlin seat, and that was the answer Lan had given him. A borderman considered the day he was given his sword to be his name day.
"So, an Anderman and yet borderland trained. Or is it warder trained?"
Barthanas's eyes narrowed, studying Rand.
"I understand Morghese has only one son, named Gawain, I have heard. You must be much like him in age."
"I have met him," Rand said cautiously.
"Those eyes, that hair. I have heard the Andoran royal line has almost Aiel coloring in their hair and eyes."
Rand stumbled, though the floor was smooth marble.
"I'm not Aiel, Lord Barthanas, and I'm not of the royal line either."
"As you say. You have given me much to think on. I believe we may find common ground when we talk again."
Barthanas nodded and raised his glass in a small salute, then turned to speak to a gray-haired man with many stripes of color down his coat. Rand shook his head and moved on, away from more conversation. It had been bad enough talking to one Kyrianan lord. He did not want to risk two. Barthanas appeared to find deep meanings in the most trivial comments. Rand realized he had just now learned enough of Deus de Mar to know he had no idea at all how it was played.
Matt, Huron, find something fast so we can get out of here. These people are crazy.
And then he entered another room, and the gleeman at the end of it, strumming his harp and reciting a tale from the Great Hunt of the Horn, was Tom Marilyn. Rand stopped dead. Tom did not seem to see him, though the gleeman's gaze passed over him twice. It seemed that Tom had meant what he said. A clean break. Rand turned to go, but a woman stepped smoothly in front of him and put a hand on his chest, the lace falling back from a soft wrist. Her head did not quite come to his shoulder, but her tall array of curls easily reached as high as his eyes. The high neck of her gown put lace ruffles under her chin, and the stripes covered the front of her dark blue dress below her breasts.
"I am Elaine Chuliandred, and you are the famous Randall Thor. In Barthanas' own manner, I suppose he has the right to speak to you first, but we are all fascinated by what we hear of you. I even hear that you play the flute. Can it be true?"
"I play the flute."
"How did she?"
"Caldwyn. Light, everybody does hear everything in Kyrian. If you will excuse me."
"I have heard that some outland lords play music, but I never believed it. I would like very much to hear you play. Perhaps you will talk with me of this and that.
Barthanas seemed to find your conversation fascinating.
My husband spends his days sampling his own vineyards, and leaves me quite alone. He is never there to talk with me."
"You must miss him," Rand said, trying to edge around her and her wide skirts. She gave a tinkling laugh, as if he had said the funniest thing in the world.
Another woman sidled in beside the first, and another hand was laid on his chest. She wore as many stripes as Elaine, and they were both of an age, a good 10 years older than he.
"Do you think to keep him to yourself, Elaine?"
The two women smiled at each other, while their eyes threw daggers. The second turned her smile on Rand.
"I am Bellavere O'Celan. Are all Andamans so tall and so handsome?"
He cleared his throat.
Some are as tall. Pardon me, but if you will—"
"I saw you talking with Barthanas. They say you know Galdrian as well. You must come to see me and talk. My husband is visiting our estates in the south."
"You have the subtlety of a tavern wench," Elaine hissed at her, and immediately was smiling up at Rand.
"She has no polish. No man could like a woman with a manner so rough. Bring your flute to my manor, and we will talk. Perhaps you will teach me to play?" "What Elaine thinks of as subtlety," Bellavere said sweetly, "is but lack of courage. A man who wears a Heronmark sword must be brave. That truly is a Heronmark blade, is it not?"
Rand tried backing away from them. "If you will just excuse me, I—"
They followed step for step until his back hit the wall. The width of their skirts together made another wall in front of him. He jumped as a third woman crowded in beside the other two, her skirts joining theirs to the wall on that side. She was older than they, but just as pretty, with an amused smile that did not lessen the sharpness of her eyes. She wore half again as many stripes as Elaine and Bellavere. They made tiny curtsies and glared at her sullenly.
"Are these two spiders trying to toil you in their webs?"
The older woman laughed.
"Half the time they tangle themselves more firmly than anyone else. Come with me, my fine young Anderman, and I will tell you some of the troubles they would give you. For one thing, I have no husband to worry about. Husbands always make trouble."
Over Elaine's head, he could see Tom straightening from a bow to no applause or notice whatsoever. With a grimace, the gleeman snatched a goblet from a tray of a startled servant.
"I see someone I must speak to," Rand told the women, and squeezed out of the box they had put him in just as the last woman reached for his arm.
All three stared after him as he hurried to the gleeman.
Tom eyed him over the lip of the goblet, then took another long swallow.
Tom, I know you said a clean break, but I had to get away from those women. All they wanted to talk about was their husbands being away, but they were already hinting at other things.
Tom choked on his wine, and Rand slapped his back.
You drink too fast, and something always goes down the wrong way. Tom, they think I am plotting with Barthanis, or maybe Galdrian, and I don't think they will believe me when I say I'm not. I just needed an excuse to leave them.
Tom stroked his long mustaches with one knuckle and peered across the room at the three women. They were still standing together, watching Rand and him.
I recognize those three, boy. Brianna Taberwin alone would give you an education such as every man should have at least once in his life, if he can live through it. Worried about their husbands. I like that, boy.
Abruptly, his eyes sharpened.
You told me you were clear of Aes Sedai. Half the talk here tonight is of the Andoran Lord, appearing with no warning, and an Aes Sedai at his side. Barthanis and Galdrian. You've let the White Tower put you in the cooking pot this time.
She only came yesterday, Tom, and as soon as the horn is safe, I'll be free of them again. I mean to see to it.
You sound as if it isn't safe now, Tom said slowly. You didn't sound that way before.
Dark friends stole it, Tom. They brought it here. Barthanis is one of them.
Tom seemed to study his wine, but his eyes darted to make sure no one was close enough to listen. More than the three women were watching them with sideways glances while pretending to talk among themselves, but every knot maintained its distance from every other. Still, Tom spoke softly.
A dangerous thing to say if it isn't true, and more dangerous if it is. An accusation like that against the most powerful man in the kingdom? You say he has the horn? I suppose you're after my help again now that you're tangled with the White Tower once more.
No.
He had decided Tom had been right, even if the gleeman did not know why. He could not involve anyone else in his troubles.
I just wanted to get away from those women.
The gleeman blew out his mustaches, taken aback.
Well, yes. That is well. The last time I helped you, I got a limp out of it, and you seem to have let yourself be tied to Tarvalin strings again. You'll have to get yourself out of it this time.
He sounded as if he were trying to convince himself.
I will, Tom, I will. Just as soon as the horn is safe and Matt has that bloody dagger back. Matt, Huron, where are you?
As if the thought had been a summons, Huron appeared in the room, eyes searching among the lords and ladies. They looked through him. Servants did not exist unless needed. When he found Rand and Tom, he made his way between the small clusters of nobles and bowed to Rand.
My lord, I was sent to tell you. Your manservant had a fall and twisted his knee. I don't know how bad, my lord.
For a moment, Rand stared before he understood. Conscious of all the eyes on him, he spoke loudly enough for the nobles closest to overhear.
Clumsy fool! What good is he to me if he can't walk? I suppose I'd better come see how badly he's hurt himself.
It seemed to be the right thing to say. Huron sounded relieved when he bowed again and said,
As my lord wishes, if my lord will follow me.
You play very well at being a lord, Tom said softly, but remember this. Kyrianen may play Deus de Mar, but it was the White Tower made the great game in the first place. Watch yourself, boy.
With a glare at the nobles, he set his empty goblet on the tray of a passing servant and strolled away, plucking his harp. He began reciting Goodwife Millie and the Silk Merchant.
Lead on, man, Rand told Huron, feeling foolish.
As he followed the sniffer out of the room, he could feel the eyes following him. Chapter 33 A Message from the Dark.
Have you found it?
Rand asked, as he followed Huron down a cramped flight of stairs. The kitchens lay on the lower levels, and the servants who had come attending the guests had all been sent there.
Or is Matt really hurt?
Oh, Matt's fine, Lord Rand,
the sniffer frowned.
At least he sounds all right, and he grumbles like a hale man. I didn't mean to worry you, but I needed a reason for you to come below. I found the trail easy enough. The men who set fire to the inn all entered a walled garden behind the manor. Trollocs joined them,
went into the garden with them. Sometime yesterday, I think. Maybe even night before last.
He hesitated.
Lord Rand, they didn't come out again. They must still be in there.
At the foot of the stairs, the sounds of the servants enjoying themselves drifted down the hall, laughter and singing. Someone had a bittern, strumming a raucous tune to clapping and the thump of dancing. There was no worked plaster or fine tapestries here, only bare stone and plain wood. Light in the halls came from rush torches, smoking the ceiling and spread far enough apart that the light faded between them.
"I'm glad you are talking to me naturally again," Rand said. "The way you have been bowing and scraping, I was beginning to think you were more Kyrianin than the Kyrianin."
Uren's face colored.
"Well, as to that..."
He glanced down the hall toward the noise and looked as if he wanted to spit.
"They all pretend to be so proper, but, Lord Rand, every one of them says he's loyal to his master or mistress, but they all hint they're willing to sell what they know or have heard. And when they have a few drinks in them, they'll tell you, all whispering in your ear, things about the lords and ladies they serve that'd make your hair stand on end. I know they're Kyrianin, but I never heard of such goings-on."
"We will be out of here soon, Huron." Rand hoped it was true.
"Where is this garden?"
Huron turned down a side hall, leading toward the back of the manor.
"Did you bring Ingtar and the others down already?"
The sniffer shook his head.
"Lord Ingtar had let himself be cornered by 6 or 7 of those who call themselves ladies. I couldn't get close enough to speak to him. And Varin Sedai was with Barthanas. She gave me such a look when I came near, I never even tried to tell her."
They rounded another corner just then, and there were Loyal and Matt, the Ogier standing a little stooped for the lower ceiling. Loyal's grin almost split his face.
"There you are, Rand. I was never so glad to get away from anyone as from those people upstairs. They kept asking me if the Ogier were coming back, and if Galdrian had agreed to pay what was owed. It seems the reason all the Ogier stonemasons left is because Galdrian stopped paying them, except with promises. I kept telling them I didn't know anything about it, but half of them seemed to think that I was lying, and the other half that I was hinting at something."
"We'll be out of here soon," Rand assured him. "Matt, are you all right?"
His friend's face looked more hollow-cheeked than he remembered, even back at the inn, and his cheekbones more prominent.
"I feel fine," Matt said grumpily, "but I certainly didn't have any trouble leaving the other servants. The ones who weren't asking if you starved me thought I was sick and didn't want to come too close."
"Have you sensed the dagger?" Rand asked. Matt shook his head glumly.
"The only thing I've sensed is that somebody's watching me most of the time. These people are as bad as fades for sneaking around. Burn me, I nearly jumped out of my skin when Huron told me he'd located the Dark Friend's trail. Rand, I can't feel it at all, and I've been through this bloody building from rafters to basement."
"That does not mean it isn't here, Matt. I put it in the chest with the horn, remember? Maybe that keeps you from feeling it. I don't think Fane knows how to open it, else he'd not have gone to the trouble of carrying the weight when he fled Faldara. Even that much gold isn't important beside the Horn of Valir. When we find the horn, we will find the dagger. You'll see.
As long as I don't have to pretend to be your servant anymore," Matt muttered. "As long as you don't go mad and..."
He let the words die with a twist of his mouth.
"Rand is not mad, Matt,"
Loyal said.
"The Kyrianin would never have let him in here if he were not a lord. They are the ones who are mad."
"I'm not mad," Rand said harshly. "Not yet.
Huron, show me this garden."
"This way, Lord Rand."
They went out into the night by a small door that Rand had to duck to get through. Loyal was forced to bend over and hunch his shoulders. There was enough light in yellow pools from the windows above for Rand to make out brick walks between square flower beds. The shadows of stables and other outbuildings bulked in the darkness to either side. Occasional fragments of music drifted out from the servants below or from those entertaining their masters above. Huron led them along the walks until even the dim glow failed, and they made their way by moonlight alone, their boots crunching softly on the brick. Bushes that would have been bright with flowers by daylight now made strange humps in the dark. Rand fingered his sword and did not let his eyes stay on any one spot too long. 100 Trollocs could be hiding around them unseen. He knew Huron would have smelled Trollocs if they were there, but that did not help a great deal. If Barthanas was a dark friend, then at least some of his servants and guards had to be too, and Huron could not always smell a dark friend. Dark friends leaping out of the night would not be much better than Trollocs.
"There, Lord Rand,"
Huron whispered, pointing. Ahead, stone walls not much higher than Loyal's head enclosed a square, perhaps 50 paces on a side. Rand could not be sure in the shadows, but it looked as if the gardens stretched on beyond the walls. He wondered why Barthanas had built a walled enclosure in the middle of his garden. No roof showed above the wall. Why would they go in there and stay? Loyal bent to put his mouth close to Rand's ear.
"I told you this was all in Ogier Grove once. Rand, the waygate is within that wall. I can feel it."
Rand heard Matt sigh despairingly.
"We can't give up, Matt," he said. "I'm not giving up. I just have enough brains not to want to travel the ways again."
"We may have to," Rand told him. "Go find Ingtar and Varen. Get them alone somehow. I don't care how. And tell them I think Fane has taken the horn through a waygate. Just don't let anyone else hear. And remember to limp. You are supposed to have had a fall." It was a wonder to him that even Fane would risk the ways, but it seemed the only answer.
They wouldn't spend a day and a night just sitting in there without a roof over their heads.
Matt swept a low bow, and his voice was heavy with sarcasm.
"At once, my lord, as my lord wishes. Shall I carry your banner, my lord?"
He started back for the manor, his grumbles fading away.
"Now I have to limp. Next it'll be a broken neck, or..."
"He's just worried about the dagger, Rand," Loyal said.
"I know," Rand said. "But how long before he tells somebody what I am, not even meaning to?" He could not believe Matt would betray him on purpose. There was that much of their friendship left, at least.
"Loyal, boost me up where I can see over the wall."
"Rand, if the dark friends are still..."
"They aren't. Boost me up, Loyal."
The three of them moved close to the wall, and Loyal made a stirrup with his hands for Rand's foot. The Ogier straightened easily with the weight, lifting Rand's head just high enough to see over the top of the wall. The thin waning moon gave little light, and most of the area was in shadow, but there did not seem to be any flowers or shrubs inside the walled square. Only a lone bench of pale marble, placed as if one man might sit on it, to stare at what stood in the middle of the space like a huge upright stone slab. Rand caught the top of the wall and pulled himself up. Loyal gave a low hist and grabbed at his foot, but he jerked free and rolled over the wall, dropping inside. There was close-cropped grass under his feet. He thought vaguely that Barthanas must let sheep in, at least. Staring at the shadowed stone slab, the waygate, he was startled to hear boots thump to the ground beside him. Huron climbed to his feet, dusting himself off.
"You should be careful doing that, Lord Rand. Could be anybody hiding in here, or anything."
He peered into the darkness within the walls, feeling at his belt as if for the short sword and swordbreaker he had had to leave at the inn. Servants did not go armed in Cairhien.
"Jump in a hole without looking, and there'll be a snake in it every time."
"You would smell them," Rand said.
"Maybe."
The sniffer inhaled deeply.
"But I can only smell what they've done, not what they intend."
There was a scraping sound from over Rand's head, and then Loyal was letting himself down from the wall. The Ogier did not even have to straighten his arms completely before his boots touched the ground.
"Rash,"
he muttered.
"You humans are always so rash and hasty. And now you have me doing it. Elder Haman would speak to me severely, and my mother..."
The darkness hid his face, but Rand was sure his ears were twitching vigorously.
"Rand, if you don't start being a little careful, you are going to get me in trouble."
Rand walked to the waygate, walked all the way around it. Even close up, it looked like nothing more than a thick square of stone, taller than he was. The back was smooth and cool to the touch. He only brushed his hand against it quickly, but the front had been carved by an artist's hands. Vines, leaves, and flowers covered it, each so finely done that in the dim moonlight they seemed almost real. He felt the ground in front of it. The grass had been scraped partly away in two arcs, such as those gates would make an opening.
"Is that a way gate?"
Huron asked uncertainly.
"I've heard tell of them, of course, but..."
He sniffed the air.
"The trail goes right to it and stops, Lord Rand. How are we going to follow them now? I've heard if you go through a way gate, you come out mad, if you come out at all."
"It can be done, Huron. I've done it, and Loyal and Matt and Perrin." Rand never took his eyes from the tangles of leaves on the stone. There was one unlike any other carved there, he knew. The trefoil leaf of fabled Avendisora, the tree of life. He put his hand on it. "I'll bet you can smell the trail along the ways. We can follow anywhere they can run." It would not hurt to prove to himself that he could make himself step through a waygate.
"I'll prove it to you."
He heard Huron groan. The leaf was worked in the stone just as the others were, but it came away in his hand. Loyal groaned too. In an instant, the illusion of living plants seemed suddenly real. Stone leaves appeared to stir with the breeze. Flowers appeared to have color even in the dark. Down the center of the mass, a line appeared, and the two halves of the slab swung slowly toward Rand. He stepped back to let them open. He did not find himself looking at the other side of the walled square, but neither did he see the dull silver reflection he remembered. The space between the opening gates was a black so dark it seemed to make the night around it lighter. The pitch blackness oozed out between the still-moving gates. Rand leaped back with a shout, dropping the Avendisora leaf in his haste, and Loyal cried out,
"Machin Shin, the black wind!"
The sound of wind filled their ears. The grass stirred in ripples toward the walls, and dirt swirled up, sucked into the air. And in the wind, 1,000 insane voices seemed to cry. 10,000, overlapping, drowning each other. Rand could make out some of them, though he tried not to.
"Blood so sweet to drink the blood that drips, drips, drops so red. Pretty eyes, fine eyes, I have no eyes. Pluck the eyes from out of your head, grind your bones, split your bones inside your flesh, suck your marrow while you scream, 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 singing screams, sing your screams."
And worst of all, a whispering thread through all the rest,
"Althor, Althor, Althor."
Rand found the void around him and embraced it, never minding the tantalizing, sickening glow of Saidin just out of his sight. Greatest of all the dangers along the ways was the black wind that took the souls of those it killed and drove mad those it let live. But Machin Shin was a part of the ways. It could not leave them. Only it was flowing into the night, and the black wind called his name. The waygate was not yet fully open. If they could only put the Avendisora leaf back. He saw Loyal scrambling on his hands and knees, fumbling and searching the grass in the darkness. Saidin filled him. He felt as if his bones were vibrating, felt the red-hot, ice-cold flow of the One Power, felt truly alive as he never was without it, felt the oil-slick taint.
"No!"
And silently he screamed back at himself from beyond the emptiness.
"It's coming for you. It'll kill all of us."
He hurled it all at the black bulge, standing out a full span from the waygate now. He did not know what it was that he hurled or how, but in the heart of that darkness bloomed a coruscating fountain of light. The black wind shrieked, 10,000 wordless howls of agony. Slowly, giving way inch by reluctant inch, the bulge lessened. Slowly the oozing reversed, back into the still-open waygate. The power raced through Rand in a torrent. He could feel the link between himself and Saidin, like a river in flood. Between himself and the pure fire blazing in the heart of the black wind, a raging cataract. The heat inside him went to white heat and beyond, to a shimmer that would have melted stone and vaporized steel and made the air burst into flame. The cold grew till the breath in his lungs should have frozen solid and hard as metal. He could feel it overwhelming him, feel life eroding like a soft clay riverbank, feel what was him wearing away.
"Can't stop. If it gets out, have to kill it. I cannot stop.
Desperately, he clung to fragments of himself. The one power roared through him. He rode it like a chip of wood in rapids. The void began to melt and flow. The emptiness steamed with freezing cold. The motion of the waygate halted and reversed. Rand stared, sure in the dim thoughts floating outside the void, that he was only seeing what he wanted to see. The gates drifted closer together, pushing back much in shin, as if the black wind had solid substance. The inferno still roared in its breast. With a vague, distant wondering, Rand saw Loyal, still on hands and knees, backing away from the closing gates. The gap narrowed, vanished. The leaves and vines merged into a solid wall and were stone. Rand felt the link between him and the fire snap, the flow of power through him cease. A moment more, and it would have swept him away completely. Shaking, he dropped to his knees. It was still there inside, Sidene. No longer flowing, but there in a pool. He was a pool of the one power. He trembled with it. He could smell the grass, the dirt beneath, the stone of the walls. Even in the darkness, he could see each blade of grass, separate and whole, all of them at once. He could feel each minute stirring of the air on his face. His tongue curdled with the taste of the taint. His stomach knotted and spasmed. Frantically, he clawed his way out of the void. Still on his knees, not moving, he fought free. And then all that was left was the fading foulness on his tongue, and the cramping in his stomach, and the memory.
So alive.
You saved us, Builder. Urin had his back pressed against the wall, and his voice was hoarse.
That thing, that was the Black Wind. It was worse than... Was it going to hurl that fire at us? Lord Rand, did it harm you? Did it touch you?
He came running as Rand got to his feet, helping him the last bit. Loyal was getting up too, dusting his hands and his knees.
We'll never follow Fane through that.
Rand touched Loyal's arm.
Thank you. You did save us.
You saved me, at least. It was killing me. Killing me, and it felt wonderful.
He swallowed. A faint trace of the taste still coated his mouth. I want something to drink.
I only found the leaf and put it back, Loyal said, shrugging. It seemed that if we could not get the waygate closed, it would kill us. I am afraid I'm not a very good hero, Rand. I was so afraid I could hardly think.
We were both afraid, Rand said. We may be a poor pair of heroes, but we are what there is. It's a good thing Ingtar is with us.
Lord Rand,
Urin said diffidently, could we
leave now?
The sniffer made a fuss about Rand going over the wall first without knowing who was waiting outside, until Rand pointed out that he had the only weapon among them. Even then, Urin did not seem to like letting Loyal lift Rand to catch the top of the wall and pull himself over. Rand landed on his feet with a thud, listening and peering into the night. For a moment, he thought he saw something move, heard a boot scrape on the brick wall, but neither was repeated, and he dismissed it as nervousness. He thought that he had a right to be nervous. He turned to help Urin down.
Lord Rand,
the sniffer said as soon as his feet were solidly on the ground.
How are we going to follow them now? From what I've heard of those things, the whole lot of them could be halfway across the world by now, in any direction.
Varen will know a way.
Rand suddenly wanted to laugh. To find the horn and the dagger, if they could be found now, he had to go back to the Aes Sedai. They had let him loose, and now he had to go back.
I won't let Matt die without trying.
Loyal joined them, and they went back toward the manor, to be met at the small door by Matt, who opened it just as Rand reached for the handle.
Varen says you're not to do anything. If Hurin's found where the horn is kept, then she says that's all we can do now. She says we'll leave as soon as you come back and make a plan. And I say, this is the last time I go running back and forth with messages. If you want to say something to somebody, you can talk to them yourself from now on.
Matt peered past them into the darkness.
Is the horn out there somewhere? In an outbuilding? Did you see the dagger?
Rand turned him around and got him back inside.
It isn't in an outbuilding, Matt. I hope Varen has a good idea of what to do now. I don't have any.
Matt looked as if he wanted to ask questions, but he let himself be pushed along the dimly lit corridor. He even remembered to limp as they started upstairs. When Rand and the others re-entered the rooms filled with nobles, they received a number of looks. Rand wondered if they somehow knew something of what had happened outside, or if he should have sent Huron and Matt to the front hall to wait. But then he realized the looks were no different from what they had been before, curious and calculating, wondering what the Lord and the Ogier had been up to. Servants were invisible to these people. No one tried to approach them, since they were together. It seemed there were protocols to conspiracy in the great game. Anyone might try to listen to a private conversation, but they would not intrude on it. Verin and Ingtar were standing together, and thus also alone. Ingtar looked a little dazed. Verin gave Rand and the other three a brief glance, frowned at their expressions, and then resettled her shawl, and started for the entry hall. As they reached it, Barthanas appeared as if someone had told him they were leaving.
"You go so soon. Verin Sedai, can I not entreat you to stay longer?"
Verin shook her head.
"We must go, Lord Barthanas. I have not been in Kyrian in some years. I was glad of your invitation to young Rand. It has been interesting."
"Then grace see you safely to your inn. The great tree, is it not? Perhaps you will favor me with your presence again. You would honor me, Verin Sedai, and you, Lord Rand, and you, Lord Ingtar, not to mention you, Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Holland."
His bow was a little deeper for the Aes Sedai than for the others, but still no more than a slight inclination. Verin nodded in acknowledgement.
"Perhaps. The light illumine you, Lord Barthanas."
She turned for the doors. As Rand moved to follow the others, Barthanas caught his sleeve with two fingers, holding him back. Matt looked as if he might stay, too, until Huron pulled him to join Verin and the rest.
"You wade even deeper in the game than I thought," Barthanas said softly. "When I heard your name, I could not believe it, yet you came, and you fit the description, and I was given a message for you. I think I will deliver it after all."
Rand had felt a prickling along his backbone as Barthanas spoke, but at the last he stared.
"A message? From whom? Lady Selene?"
"A man. Not the sort for whom I would usually carry messages, but he has certain claims on me that I cannot ignore. He gave no name, but he was a Lugarder."
"Ah, you know him?"
"I know him."
"Thane left a message?"
Rand looked around the wide hall. Matt and Verin and the others were waiting by the doors. Liveried servants stood stiffly along the walls, ready to leap at a command, yet appearing neither to hear nor see. The sounds of the gathering floated from deeper in the manor. It did not look like a place where dark friends might attack.
"What message?"
"He says he will wait for you on Toman Head. He has what you seek, and if you want it, you must follow. If you refuse to follow him, he says he will hound your blood and your people and those you love until you will face him." It sounds mad, of course, a man like that saying he will hound a lord, and yet there was something about him. I think he is mad. He even denied you are a lord, as any eye can plainly see. But there is still something. What is it he carries with him, with Trollocs to guard it? What is it you seek?"
Barthanas seemed shocked at the directness of his own questions.
"The light illumine you, Lord Barthanas."
Rand managed a bow, but his legs wobbled as he joined Verin and the others.
"He wants me to follow? And he'll hurt Emmons Field, Tam, if I don't?"
He had no doubt Fane could do it, would do it.
"At least Egwene is safe in the White Tower."
He had sickening images of Trollocs descending in hordes on Emmons Field, of eyeless fades stalking Egwene.
"But how can I follow him? How?"
Then he was out in the night, mounting Red. Verin and Ingtar and the others were all already on their horses, and the escort of Shinarans was closing round them.
"What did you find?" Verin demanded. Where does he keep it?
Huron cleared his throat loudly and Loyal shifted in his high saddle. The Aes Sedai peered at them.
Fane has taken the horn to Toman Head through a waygate, Rand said dully. By this time he's probably already waiting there for me.
We will speak of this later, Varen said,
so firmly that no one spoke at all on the ride back to the city, to the great tree. Uno left them there, after a quiet word from Ingtar, taking the soldiers back to their inn in the foregate. Huron took one look at Varen's set face by the light of the common room, muttered something about ale, and scurried to a table in a corner alone. The Aes Sedai brushed aside the innkeeper's solicitous hopes that she had enjoyed herself, and silently led Rand and the rest to the private dining room. Perrin looked up from the travels of Jane Forestrider when they walked in, and frowned when he saw their faces.
It didn't go well, did it?
He asked, closing the leather-bound book. Lamps and beeswax candles around the room gave a good light. Mistress Teardra charged heavily, but she did not stint. Varen carefully folded her shawl and laid it across the back of a chair.
Tell me again. The Dark Friends took the horn through a waygate? At Barthanas's manor?
The ground under the manor used to be an Ogier grove, Loyal explained. When we built...
His voice trailed off and his ears wilted under her look. Huron followed them right to it. Rand wearily threw himself into a chair.
I have to follow more than ever now, but how?
I opened it to show him he could still follow the trail, wherever they went, and the black wind was there. It tried to reach us, but Loyal managed to close the gates before it could come all the way out. He colored a little at that, but Loyal had closed the gates, and for all he knew, Machin Shin might have made it out without that. It was standing guard.
The black wind,
Matt breathed, frozen halfway into a chair. Perrin was staring at Rand, too. So were Varen and Ingtar. Matt dropped into the chair with a thump.
You must be mistaken, Varen said at last. Machin Shin could not be used as a guard. No one can constrain the black wind to do anything.
It's a creature of the Dark One, Matt said numbly. They're dark friends. Maybe they knew how to ask it for help or make it help.
No one knows exactly what Machin Shin is, Varen said, unless perhaps it is the essence of madness and cruelty. It cannot be reasoned with, Matt, or bargained with, or talked to. It cannot even be forced, not by any Aes Sedai living today, and perhaps not by any who ever lived. Do you really think Padan Fane could do what 10 Aes Sedai could not?
Matt shook his head. There was an air of despair in the room, of hope and purpose lost. The goal they had sought had vanished, and even Varen's face wore a floundering expression.
I'd never have thought Fane had the courage for the ways.
Ingtar sounded almost mild, but suddenly he banged his fist against the wall.
I do not care how, or even if, Machin Shin works on Fane's behalf. They have taken the Horn of Valir into the ways, Aes Sedai. By now they could be in the Blight, or halfway to Tyr, or Tanchico, or the other side of the Aiel Waste. The Horn is lost. I am lost.
His hands dropped to his sides and his shoulders slumped.
I am lost.
Fane is taking it to Toman Head, Rand said, and was immediately the object of all eyes again. Varen studied him narrowly.
You said that before. How do you know?
He left a message with Barthanas, Rand said. A trick, Ingtar sneered. He'd not tell us where to follow.
I don't know what the rest of you are going to do, Rand said, but I am going to Toman Head. I have to. I leave at first light.
But Rand, Loyal said, it will take us months to reach Toman Head. What makes you think Fane will wait there for us?
He will wait. But how long before he decides I'm not coming? Why did he set that guard if he wants me to follow?
Loyal, I mean to ride as hard as I can, and if I ride Red to death, I'll buy another horse or steal another, if I have to. Are you sure you want to come?
I've stayed with you this long, Rand. Why would I stop now?
Loyal pulled out his pipe and pouch and began thumbing tobacco into the big bowl.
You see, I like you. I would like you even if you weren't Taviran. Maybe I like you despite it. You do seem to get me neck deep in hot water. In any case, I am going with you.
He sucked on the pipe stem to test the draw, then took a splinter from the stone jar on the mantel and thrust it into a candle flame for a light.
And I don't think you can really stop me.
Well, I'm going, Matt said. Fane still has that dagger, so I'm going. But all that servant business ended tonight.
Perrin sighed, an introspective look in his yellow eyes.
I suppose I'll come along, too.
After a moment, he grinned.
Somebody has to keep Matt out of trouble.
Not even a clever trick,
Ingtar muttered.
Somehow, I'll get Barthanas alone, and I will learn the truth. I mean to have the Horn of Valir, not chase Jack of the Wisps.
It may not be a trick, Varen said carefully, seeming to study the floor under her toes. There were certainly things left in the dungeons at Faldara, writings that indicated a connection between what happened that night and, she gave Rand a quick glance under lowered brows, Toman Head. I still do not understand them completely, but I believe we must go to Toman Head, and I believe we will find the horn there.
Even if they are going to Toman Head, Ingtar said, by the time we reach it, Fane or one of the other dark friends could have blown the horn 100 times, and the heroes returned from the grave will ride for the shadow.
Fane could have blown the horn 100 times since leaving Faldara, Varen told him, and I think he would have if he could open the chest. What we must worry about is that he might find someone who does know how to open it. We must follow him along the ways.
Perrin's head came up sharply, and Matt shifted in his chair.
Loyal gave a low moan. Even if we could somehow sneak past Barthanas' guards, Rand said, I think we'll find Mach and Shin still there. We cannot use the ways.
How many of us could sneak onto Barthanas' grounds? Varen said dismissively. There are other waygates. Steading Tsofu lies not far from the city, south and east. It is a young steading, rediscovered only perhaps 600 years ago. But the Ogier elders were still growing the ways then. Steading Tsofu will have a waygate. It is there, and we will ride at first light.
Loyal made a slightly louder sound, and Rand was not sure whether it referred to the waygate or the steading. Ingtar still did not seem convinced, but Varen was as smooth and as implacable as snow sliding down a mountainside.
You will have your soldiers ready to ride, Ingtar. Send Huron to tell Uno before he goes to bed. I think we should all go to bed as soon as possible. These dark friends have gained at least a day on us already, and I mean to make up as much of it as I can tomorrow.
So firm was the plump Aes Sedai's manner that she was already herding Ingtar to the door before she finished speaking. Rand followed the others out, but at the door he stopped beside the Aes Sedai and watched Matt heading down the candlelit hall.
Why does he look like that? He asked her. I thought you healed him again, enough to give him some time anyway.
She waited until Matt and the others had turned up the stairs before speaking.
Apparently it did not work so well as we believed. The sickness takes an interesting course in him. His strength remains. He will keep that to the end, I think. But his body wastes away. Another few weeks at most, I would say. You see, there is reason for haste.
I do not need another spur, Aes Sedai, Rand said, making the title sound hard.
Matt, the horn, Fane's threat. Light Egwene. Burn me, I don't need another spur. And what of you, Randalthor? Do you feel well? Do you fight it still, or have you yet surrendered to the wheel?
I ride with you to find the horn, he told her. Beyond that, there is nothing between me and any Aes Sedai. Do you understand me? Nothing.
She did not speak, and he walked away from her. But when he turned to take the stairs, she was still watching him, dark eyes sharp and considering.
Chapter 34 The Wheel Weaves. The first light of morning already pearled the sky by the time Tom Marilyn found himself trudging back to the bunch of grapes. Even where the halls and taverns lay thickest, there was a brief time when the foregate lay quiet, gathering its breath. In his present mood, Tom would not have noticed if the empty street had been on fire.
Some of Barthanas's guests had insisted on keeping him long after most had gone, long after Barthanas had taken himself to bed. It had been his own fault for leaving the Great Hunt of the Horn, changing to the sort of tales he told and songs he sang in the villages. Mara and the Three Foolish Kings, and Haususa tamed Jaen Farstrider, and stories of Anla, the Wise Counselor. He had meant the choices to be a private comment on their stupidity, never dreaming any of them might listen, much less be intrigued. Intrigued in a way. They had demanded more of the same, but they had laughed in the wrong places, at the wrong things. They had laughed at him, too, apparently thinking he would not notice, or else that a full purse stuffed in his pocket would heal any wounds. He had almost thrown it away twice already. The heavy purse burning his pocket and pride was not the only reason for his mood, nor even the noble's contempt. They had asked questions about Rand, not even bothering to be subtle with a mere gleeman. Why was Rand in Kyrian? Why had an Andoran lord taken him, a gleeman, aside? Too many questions. He was not sure his answers had been clever enough. His reflexes for the great game were rusty. Before turning toward the bunch of grapes, he had gone to the great tree. It was not difficult to find where someone was staying in Kyrian if you pressed a palm or two with silver. He was still not sure what he had intended to say. Rand was gone with his friends and the Aes Sedai. It left a feeling of something not done.
The boy's on his own now. Burn me, I'm out of it.
He strode through the common room, empty as it seldom was, and took the steps two at a time. At least he tried to. His right leg did not bend well, and he nearly fell. Muttering to himself, he climbed the rest of the way at a slower pace and opened the door to his room softly, so as not to wake Dina. Despite himself, he smiled when he saw her lying on the bed with her face turned to the wall, still in her dress.
Fell asleep waiting for me, fool girl.
But it was a kindly thought. He was not sure there was anything she would do that he would not forgive or excuse. Deciding on the spur of the moment that tonight was the night he'd let her perform for the first time, he lowered his harp case to the floor and put a hand on her shoulder to wake her and tell her. She rolled limply onto her back, staring up at him, glazed eyes open wide above the gash across her throat. The side of the bed that had been hidden by her body was dark and sodden. Tom's stomach heaved. If his throat had not been so tight he could not breathe, he would have vomited or screamed or both. He had only the creaking of wardrobe doors for warning. He spun, knives coming out of his sleeves, leaving his hands in the same motion. The first blade took the throat of a fat, balding man with a dagger in his hand. The man stumbled back, blood bubbling around his clutching fingers as he tried to cry out. Spinning on his bad leg threw Tom's other blade off, though. The knife stuck in the right shoulder of a heavily muscled man with scars on his face, who was climbing out of the other wardrobe. The big man's knife dropped from a hand that suddenly would not do what he wanted, and he lumbered for the door. Before he could take a second step, Tom produced another knife and slashed him across the back of his leg. The big man yelled and stumbled, and Tom seized a handful of greasy hair, slamming his face against the wall beside the door. The man screamed again as the knife hilt, sticking out of his shoulder, hit the door. Tom thrust the blade in his hand to within an inch of the man's dark eye. The scars in the big man's face gave him a hard look. But he stared at the point without blinking and did not move a muscle. The fat man, lying half in the wardrobe, kicked a last kick and was still.
"Before I kill you," Tom said, "tell me, why?"
His voice was quiet, numb. He felt numb inside.
"The great game," the man said quickly.
His accent was of the streets and his clothes as well, but they were a shade too fine, too unworn. He had more coin to spend than any four-gator should.
"Nothing against you personally, you see. It is just the game." "The game. I'm not mixed up in Deus Demar. Who would want to kill me for the great game?"
The man hesitated. Tom moved his blade closer. If the fellow blinked, his eyelashes would brush the point.
"Who?" "Barthanas," came the hoarse answer. "Lord Barthanas. We would not have killed you. Barthanas wants information. We just wanted to find out what you know. There can be gold in it for you. A nice, fat, golden crown for what you know. Maybe two.
Liar!
I was in Barthanas' manor last night, as close to him as I am to you. If he wanted anything of me, I'd never have left alive.
I tell you, we have been looking for you, or anyone who knows about this Andoran lord, for days. I never heard your name until last night downstairs. Lord Barthanas is generous. It could be 5 crowns.
The man tried to pull his head away from the knife in Tom's hand, and Tom pushed him harder against the wall.
What Andoran lord?
But he knew. The light helped him, he knew.
Rand, of House Althor. Tall, young, a blade master, or at least he wears the sword. I know he came to see you. Him and an ogier, and you talked. Tell me what you know. I might even throw in a crown or two myself.
You fool,
Tom breathed. Dina died for this.
Oh, light, she's dead.
He felt as if he wanted to cry.
The boy's a shepherd.
A shepherd in a fancy coat with Aes Sedai around him like bees around honey roses.
Just a shepherd.
He tightened his grip in the man's hair.
Wait, wait! You can make more than any 5 crowns, or even 10. 100 more like. Every house wants to know about this, Rand Althor. 2 or 3 have approached me. With what you know, and my knowing who wants to know it, we could both fill our pockets. And there has been a woman, a lady, I have seen more than once while asking after him. If we can find out who she is, why, we could sell that too.
You've made one real mistake in it all, Tom said.
Mistake?
The man's far hand was beginning to slide down toward his belt. No doubt he had another dagger there. Tom ignored it.
You should never have touched the girl.
The man's hand darted for his belt, then he gave one convulsive start as Tom's knife went home. Tom let him fall over away from the door and stood a moment before bending tiredly to tug his blades free. The door banged open, and he whirled with a snarl on his face. Zara jerked back, a hand to her throat, staring at him,
Ella just told me, she said unsteadily. The 2 of Barthanas' men were asking after you last night, and with what I have heard this morning, I thought you said you didn't play in the game anymore.
They found me, he said wearily.
Her eyes dropped from his face and widened as they took in the bodies of the 2 men. Hastily, she stepped into the room, shutting the door behind her.
This is bad, Tom. You'll have to leave Cairhien.
Her gaze fell on the bed, and her breath caught.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, Tom, I'm so sorry.
I cannot leave yet, Zara.
He hesitated, then tenderly drew a blanket over Dina, covering her face.
I have another man to kill first.
The innkeeper gave herself a shake and pulled her eyes away from the bed. Her voice was more than a little breathy.
If you mean Barthanas, you're too late. Everybody's talking about it already. He is dead. His servants found him this morning, torn to pieces in his bedchamber. The only way they knew it was him was his head stuck on a spike over the fireplace.
She laid a hand on his arm.
Tom, you can't hide that you were there last night. Not from anybody who wants to know. Add these 2 in, and there's nobody in Cairhien who won't believe you're involved.
There was a slight questioning note in her last words, as if she too were wondering.
It doesn't matter, I suppose, he said dully.
He could not stop looking down at the blanket-covered shape on the bed.
Perhaps I will go back to Andor, to Camelon.
She shook his shoulders, turning him away from the bed.
You men, she sighed. Always thinking with either your muscles or your hearts, and never your heads. Camelon is as bad as Cairhien for you. Either place you'll end up dead or in prison. Do you think she'd want that? If you want to honor her memory, stay alive.
Will you take care of...
He could not say it. Growing old, he thought, growing soft. He pulled the heavy purse from his pocket and folded her hands around it.
We should take care of everything. And help when they start asking questions about me, too.
I will see to everything, she said gently. You must go, Tom. Now.
He nodded reluctantly and slowly began stuffing a few things in a set of saddlebags.
While he worked, Zara got her first close look at the fat man sprawled partway in the wardrobe, and she gave a loud gasp. He looked at her inquiringly. As long as he had known her, she had never been one to faint over blood.
"These aren't Barthanas's men, Tom. At least that one isn't."
She nodded toward the fat man.
"It's the worst-kept secret in Kyrian that he works for House Rhaetyn. For Galdrian."
"Galdrian," he said flatly. "What has that bloody shepherd gotten me into? What have the Aes Sedai gotten us both into?" But it was Galdrian's men murdered her.
There must have been something of his thoughts on his face. Zara said sharply,
"Dina wants you alive, you fool. You try to kill the king, and you'll be dead before you get within 100 spans of him, if you come that close."
A roar came from within the city walls, as if half of Kyrian were shouting. Frowning, Tom peered from his window. Beyond the top of the gray walls, above the rooftops of the foregate, a thick column of smoke was rising into the sky, far beyond the walls. Beside the first black pillar, a few gray tendrils quickly grew into another, and more wisps appeared further on. He estimated the distance and took a deep breath.
"Perhaps you had better think of leaving, too. It looks as if someone is firing the granaries."
"I have lived through riots before. Go now, Tom."
With a last look at Dina's shrouded form, he gathered his things, but as he started to leave, Zara spoke again.
"You have a dangerous look in your eyes, Tom Merrillin. Imagine Dina sitting here, alive and hale. Think what she would say. Would she let you go off and get yourself killed to no purpose?"
"I am only an old gleeman," he said from the door. "And Randolph Thor is only a shepherd, but we both do what we must. Who could I possibly be dangerous to?"
As he pulled the door to, hiding her, hiding Dina, a mirthless, wolfish grin came onto his face. His leg hurt, but he barely felt it as he turned purposely down the stairs and out of the inn. Padan Fain reined in his horse atop a hill above Falma, in one of the few sparse thickets remaining on the hills outside the town. The pack horse bearing his precious burden bumped his leg, and he kicked it in the ribs without looking. The animal snorted and jerked back to the end of the lead he had tied to his saddle. The woman had not wanted to give up her horse, no more than any of the dark friends who had followed him had wanted to be left alone, in the hills with the Trollocs, without Fane's protecting presence. He had solved both problems easily. Meat in a Trolloc cookpot had no need of a horse. The woman's companions had been shaken by the journey along the ways to a waygate outside a long-abandoned steading on Toman Head. And watching the Trollocs prepare their dinner had made the surviving dark friends extremely biddable. From the edge of the trees, Fane studied the unwalled town and sneered. One short merchant train was rumbling in among the stables and horse lots and wagon yards that bordered the town, while another rumbled out, raising little dust from dirt packed by many years of such traffic. The men driving the wagons and the few riding beside them were all local men by their clothing, yet the mounted men at least had swords on baldricks, and even a few spears and bows. The soldiers he saw, and there were few, did not seem to be watching the armed men they had supposedly conquered. He had learned something of these people, these Shan Chan, in his day and a night on Toman Head, at least as much as the defeated folk knew. It was never hard to find someone alone, and they always answered questions properly put. Men gathered more information on the invaders, as if they actually believed they would eventually do something with what they knew, but they sometimes tried to hold back. Women, by and large, seemed interested in going on with their lives, whoever their rulers were. Yet they noted details men did not, and they talked more quickly once they stopped screaming. Children talked the quickest of all, but they seldom said much that was worthwhile. He had discarded 3/4 of what he had heard as nonsense and rumors growing into fables, but he took some of those conclusions back now. Anyone at all could enter Falma, it appeared. With a start, he saw the truth of a little more nonsense as 20 soldiers rode out of town. He could not make out their mounts clearly, but they were certainly not horses. They ran with a fluid grace, and their dark skins seemed to have a glint in the morning sun, as of scales. He craned his neck to watch them disappear inland, then booted his horse toward the town. The local folk among the stables and parked wagons and fenced horse lots gave him no more than a glance or two. He had no interest in them either. He rode on into the town, onto its cobblestone streets sloping down to the harbor. He could see the harbor clearly, and the large, oddly shaped Shanchan ships anchored there. No one bothered him as he searched streets that were neither crowded nor empty. There were more Shanchan soldiers here. The people hurried about their business with eyes down, bowing whenever soldiers passed, but the Shanchan paid them no mind. It all seemed peaceful on the surface, despite the armored Shanchan in the streets and the ships in the harbor. But Fane could sense the tension underneath. He always did well when men were tense and afraid. He came to a large house with more than a dozen soldiers standing guard before it. Fane stopped and dismounted. Except for one obvious officer, most wore armor of unrelieved black, and their helmets made him think of locusts' heads. Two leathery-skinned beasts with three eyes and horny beaks instead of mouths flanked the front door, squatting like crouching frogs. The soldier standing by each of the creatures had three eyes painted on the breast of his armor. Fane eyed the blue-bordered banner flapping above the roof, the spread-winged hawk clutching lightning bolts, and chortled inside himself. Women went in and out of a house across the street, women linked by silver leashes, but he ignored them. He knew about Damani from the villagers. They might be of some use later, but not now. The soldiers were looking at him, especially the officer, whose armor was all gold and red and green. Forcing an ingratiating smile onto his face, Fane made himself bow deeply. "My lords, I have something here that will interest your great lord. I assure you he will want to see it, and me, personally." He gestured to the square shape on his pack horse, still wrapped in the huge striped blanket in which his people had found it. The officer stared him up and down. "You sound a foreigner to this land. Have you taken the oaths?"
"I obey, await, and will serve," Fane replied smoothly.
Everyone he had questioned spoke of the oaths, though none had understood what they meant. If these people wanted oaths, he was prepared to swear to anything. He had long since lost count of the oaths he had taken. The officer motioned two of his men to see what was under the blanket. Surprised grunts at the weight as they lifted it down from the pack saddle turned to gasps when they stripped the blanket away. The officer stared with no expression on his face at the silver-worked golden chest resting on the cobblestones, then looked at Fane.
"A gift fit for the Empress herself. You will come with me."
One of the soldiers searched Fane roughly, but he endured it in silence, noting that the officer and the two soldiers who took up the chest surrendered their swords and daggers before going inside. Anything he could learn of these people, however small, might help, though he was confident of his plan already. He was always confident, but never more than where lords feared an assassin's knife from their own followers. As they went through the door, the officer frowned at him, and for a moment Fane wondered why.
Of course, the beasts.
Whatever they were certainly no worse than Trollocs, nothing at all beside a Murdrol, and he had not given them a second look. It was too late to pretend to be afraid of them now, but the Shanchan said nothing, only led him deeper into the house. And so Fane found himself on his face in a room bare of furnishings except for folding screens that hid its walls, while the officer told the High Lord Turok of him and his offering. Servants brought a table on which to set the chest so the High Lord would have no need to stoop. All Fane saw of them were scurrying slippers. He bided his time impatiently. Eventually there would come a time when he was not the one to bow. Then the soldiers were dismissed and Fane told to rise. He did so slowly, studying both the High Lord, with his shaven head and his long fingernails and his blue silk robe, brocaded with blossoms, and the man who stood beside him, with the unshaven half of his pale hair in a long braid. Fane was sure the fellow in green was only a servant, however great, but servants could be useful, especially if they stood high in their master's sight.
"A marvelous gift."
Turok's eyes lifted from the chest to Fane. A scent of roses wafted from the High Lord.
"Yet the question asks itself,
How did one like you come by a chest many lesser lords could not afford? Are you a thief?
Thane tugged at his worn, none-too-clean coat.
It is sometimes necessary for a man to appear less than he is, High Lord. My present shabbiness allowed me to bring this to you unmolested. This chest is old, High Lord, as old as the Age of Legends, and within it lies a treasure such as few eyes have ever seen. Soon, very soon, High Lord, I will be able to open it and give you that which will enable you to take this land as far as you wish, to the spine of the world, the Aiel Waste, the lands beyond. Nothing will stand against you, High Lord. Once I...
He cut off as Churok began running his long-nailed fingers over the chest.
I have seen chests such as this, chests from the Age of Legends, the High Lord said, though none so fine. They are meant to be opened only by those who know the pattern, but I... Ah.
He pressed among the ornate whorls and bosses. There was a sharp click, and he lifted back the lid. A flicker of what might have been disappointment passed across his face. Thane bit the inside of his lip till blood came to keep from snarling. It lessened his bargaining position that he was not the one who had opened the chest. Still, all the rest could go as he had planned if he could only make himself be patient. But he had been patient so long.
These are treasures from the Age of Legends, Churok said,
lifting out the curled horn in one hand and the curved dagger with the ruby in its golden hilt in the other. Thane clutched his hands and fists at his sides so he would not grab the dagger.
The Age of Legends, Churok repeated softly, tracing the silver script inlaid around the golden bell of the horn with the tip of the dagger's blade.
His brows rose in startlement, the first open expression Thane had seen from him, but in the next instant, Churok's face was as smooth as ever.
Do you have any idea what this is?
The Horn of Valir, High Lord, Thane said smoothly, pleased to see the mouth of the man with the braid drop open.
Churok only nodded as if to himself. The High Lord turned away. Thane blinked and opened his mouth, then, at a sharp gesture from the yellow-haired man, followed without speaking. It was another room with all the original furnishings gone, replaced by folding screens and a single chair facing a tall, round cabinet. Still holding the horn and the dagger, Churok looked at the cabinet, then away. He said nothing. But the other Shan Chan snapped quick orders, and in moments, men in plain woolen robes appeared through a door behind the screens, bearing another table. A young woman, with hair so pale it was almost white, came behind them, her arms full of small stands of polished wood in various sizes and shapes. Her garment was white silk and so thin that Thane could see her body clearly through it. But he had eyes only for the dagger. The horn was a means to an end, but the dagger was a part of him. Churok briefly touched one of the wooden stands the girl held, and she placed it on the center of the table. The men turned the chair to face it under the direction of the man with the braid. The lower servants' hair hung to their shoulders. They scurried out with bows that almost put their heads on their knees. Placing the horn on the stand so that it stood upright, Churok laid the dagger on the table in front of it and went to sit in the chair. Thane could no longer stand it. He reached for the dagger. The yellow-haired man caught his wrist in a crushing grip.
Unshaven dog! Know that the hand that touches the property of the High Lord unbidden is cut off.
It is mine, Thane growled.
Patience. So long.
Churok, lounging back in the chair, lifted one blue lacquered fingernail and Thane was pulled out of the way so the High Lord could view the horn unobstructed.
Yours, Churok said. Inside a chest you could not open. If you interest me sufficiently, I may give you the dagger. Even if it is from the Age of Legends, I have no interest in such as that. Before all else, you will answer me a question. Why have you brought the Horn of Valir to me?
Thane eyed the dagger longingly a moment more, then jerked his wrist free and rubbed it as he bowed.
That you may sound it, High Lord. Then you may take all of this land if you wish. All of the world. You may break the White Tower and grind the Aes Sedai to dust,
for even their powers cannot stop heroes come back from the dead.
I am to sound it.
Turok's tone was flat.
And break the White Tower. Again, why? You claim to obey, await, and serve, but this is a land of oathbreakers. Why do you give your land to me? Do you have some private quarrel with these women?
Fane tried to make his voice convincing.
Patient, like a worm boring from within.
High Lord, my family has passed down a tradition, generation upon generation. We serve the High King, Artur Peandreg Tanriol, and when he was murdered by the witches of Tarvalin, we did not abandon our oaths. When others warred and tore apart what Artur Hawkwing had made, we held to our swearing and suffered for it, but held to it still. This is our tradition, High Lord. Handed father to son and mother to daughter, down all the years since the High King was murdered. That we await the return of the armies Artur Hawkwing sent across the Arith Ocean. That we await the return of Artur Hawkwing's blood to destroy the White Tower and take back what was the High King's. And when the Hawkwing's blood returns, we will serve and advise as we did for the High King. High Lord, except for its border, the banner that flies over this roof is the banner of Luthair. The son Artur Peandreg Tanriol sent with his armies across the ocean. Fane dropped to his knees, giving a good imitation of being overwhelmed. High Lord, I wish only to serve and advise the blood of the High King. Turok was silent so long that Fane began to wonder if he needed further convincing. He was ready with more, as much as was required. Finally, though, the High Lord spoke.
You seem to know what none, neither the high nor low, has spoken since sighting this land. The people here speak it as one rumor among ten, but you know. I can see it in your eyes, hear it in your voice. I can almost think you were sent to entangle me in a trap. But who, possessing the Horn of Elir, would use it so? None of those of the blood who came with the Hylena could have had the horn, for the legend says it was hidden in this land. And surely any lord of this land would use it against me rather than put it in my hands. How did you come to possess the Horn of Valier? Do you claim to be a hero, as in the legend? Have you done valorous deeds?
I am no hero, High Lord. Fane ventured a self-deprecating smile, but Turok's face did not alter, and he let it go. The horn was found by an ancestor of mine during the turmoil after the king's death. He knew how to open the chest, but that secret died with him in the War of the 100 Years that rent Artur Hawkwing's empire, so that all we who followed him knew was that the horn lay within, and we must keep it safe until the High King's blood returned.
Almost could I believe you.
Believe, High Lord. Once you sound the horn,
do not ruin what convincing you have managed to do. I shall not sound the Horn of Valir. When I return to Shonshan, I shall present it to the Empress as the chiefest of my trophies. Perhaps the Entrist will sound it herself.
But, High Lord, Fane protested, you must! He found himself lying on his side, his head ringing. Only when his eyes cleared did he see the man with the pale braid, rubbing his knuckles and realize what had happened.
Some words, the fellow said softly, are never used to thy lord.
Fane decided how the man was going to die. Turok looked from Fane to the horn as placidly as if he had seen nothing.
Perhaps I will give you to the Empress along with the Horn of Valier. She might find you amusing, a man who claims his family held true where all others broke their oaths or forgot them.
Fane hid his sudden elation in the act of climbing back to his feet. He had not even known of the existence of an empress until Turok mentioned her. But access to a ruler again, that opened new paths, new plans. Access to a ruler with the might of the Shonshan beneath her and the Horn of Valir in her hands. Much better than making this Turok a great king. He could wait for some parts of his plan.
Softly. Mustn't let him know how much you want it. After so long, a little more patience will not hurt.
As the High Lord wishes, he said, trying to sound like a man who only wanted to serve.
You seem almost eager, Turok said, and Fane barely suppressed a wince. I will tell you why I will not sound the Horn of Valir or even keep it, and perhaps that will cure your eagerness. I do not wish a gift of mine to offend the Empress by his actions. If your eagerness cannot be cured, it will never be satisfied, for you will never leave these shores. Do you know that whoever blows the Horn of Valir is linked to it thereafter? That so long as he or she lives, it is no more than a horn to any other?
He did not sound as if he expected answers, and in any case, he did not pause for them.
I stand 12th in the line of succession to the Crystal Throne. If I kept the Horn of Valir, all between myself and the throne would think I meant to be first hereafter. And while the Empress, of course, wishes that we contend with one another so that the strongest and most cunning will follow her, she currently favors her second daughter, and she would not look well on any threat to Tuan. If I sounded it, even if I then laid this land at her feet and every woman in the White Tower leashed, the Empress, may she live forever, would surely believe I meant to be more than merely her heir.
Fane stopped himself short of suggesting how possible that would be with the aid of the horn. Something in the High Lord's voice suggested, as hard as Fane found it to believe, that he actually meant his wish for her to live forever.
I must be patient. A worm in the root.
The Empress's listeners may be anywhere,
Turok continued.
They may be anyone. Juan was born and raised in the house of Aladan, and his family for 11 generations before him, yet even he could be a listener.
The man with the braid half made a protesting gesture before jerking himself back to stillness.
Even a High Lord or a High Lady can find their deepest secrets known to listeners, can wake to find themselves already handed over to the seekers for truth. Truth is always difficult to find, but the seekers spare no pain in their search, and they will search as long as they think there is need. They make great efforts not to allow a High Lord or High Lady to die in their care, of course. For no man's hand may slay one in whose veins flows the blood of Otto Hawkwing. If the Empress must order such a death, the unfortunate one is placed alive in a silken bag, and that bag hung over the side of the Tower of the Ravens, and left there until it rots away. No such care would be taken for one such as you. At the Court of the Nine Moons in Shandar, one such as you could be given to the seekers for a shift of your eye, for a misspoken word, for a whim. Are you still eager?
Fane managed a tremble in his knees.
I only wish to serve and advise, High Lord. I know much that may be useful.
This Court of Shandar sounded a place where his plans and skills would find fertile ground.
Until I sail back to Shonchan, you will amuse me with your tales of your family and its tradition. It is a relief to find a second man in this light-forsaken land who can amuse me, even if you both tell lies, as I suspect. You may leave me.
No other word was spoken, but the girl, with the nearly white hair and the almost transparent robe, appeared on quick feet to kneel with downcast head beside the High Lord, offering a single steaming cup on a lacquered tray.
High Lord, Fane said.
The man with the braid, Juan, took hold of his arm, but he pulled loose. Juan's mouth tightened angrily as Fane made his deepest bow yet.
I will kill him slowly, yes. High Lord, there are those who follow me. They mean to take the Horn of Valir. Dark friends and worse, High Lord. And they cannot be more than a day or two behind me.
Turok took a sip of black liquid from the thin cup balanced on long-nailed fingertips.
Few dark friends remain in Shonjan. Those who survive the seekers for truth meet the axe of the headsman. It might be amusing to meet a dark friend.
High Lord,
they are dangerous. They have Trollocs with them.
They are led by one who calls himself Randall Thor. A young man, but vile in the shadow beyond belief, with a lying, devious tongue. In many places he has claimed to be many things, but always the Trollocs come when he is there, High Lord. Always the Trollocs come and kill.
Trollocs, Chirok mused. There were no Trollocs in Shonchan, but the armies of the night had other allies, other things. I've often wondered if a Grom could kill a Trolloc. I will have watch kept for your Trollocs and your dark friends, if they are not another lie. This land wearies me with boredom.
He sighed and inhaled the fumes from his cup. Fane let the grimacing Juan pull him out of the room, hardly even listening to the snarled lecture on what would happen if he ever again failed to leave Lord Turok's presence when given permission to do so. He barely noticed when he was pushed into the street with a coin and instructions to return on the morrow.
Randalthor was his now. I will see him dead at last, and then the world will pay for what was done to me.
Giggling under his breath, he led his horses down into the town in search of an inn.